Flyers Daily with Jason Martinez.
All right, here we go. Brand new Flyers Daily for a brand new month, the month of August 2025, August 1st edition, brought to you by Ticketmaster. Make more memories live. We tick into another month, a month with no hockey, but a month closer to Captain Skates coming up in September, the beginning of rookie camp coming up in September, the rookie game coming up on September 12th and 13th at the PPL Center against the New York Ranger rookies once again. And obviously training camp, preseason, and will be underway into a new season soon enough. Question marks loom. We talked about Rick Tocchet and the effect he'll have, him and his coaching staff will have on this Philadelphia Flyers team both next year and beyond. And in this episode, we take on the biggest question mark of the offseason, and it's goaltending. Once again, such a consequential position by my count, and I'm biased, I get it. I'm in the goalie union. Goaltending is the most consequential position in sport. Goaltender never leaves the ice. People would argue, well, the quarterback is the most consequential position in sports. Well, he leaves the field of play for half of it. Now, the puck isn't always in the goalie's end, but that's an argument for another day. But in this episode, we take it on, head on, and we go deeper than just goalie see puck, goalie stop puck. We consider a goaltender's environment. We consider what the team in front of the goaltender has given up and how that may affect a goaltender. We talk about when a goaltender gives up bad goals and how that affects the team in front of them. Kevin Woodley from InGoal Magazine is going to join us in just a moment. InGoal radio podcast. He's the goalie expert. He's got great analytics from Clearsight Analytics, Stephen Valiquette, who's a former Ranger goaltender, Madison Square Garden Network. Now he's an analyst for the Rangers and developed a system to quantify shot quality and scoring chances. It's not just a goaltender website. It's also about generating offense from those spots. And we'll get into the mentality of a goaltender in an evolving position right now. There's an evolution going on in the NHL about quality of shots and scoring chances versus quantity. We'll break that down as well. But as we head into this season, we know the goaltending last year was Sam Harrison, who was in and out of the lineup at times while being injured. We know it was Ivan Fedotov and Alexei Kolosov. We'll hear details on the environment that they dealt with last year in the NHL. We know the end result, and we know that the Flyers, by the raw numbers, had the 32nd ranked goaltending room, if you will, combination in the NHL. All said and done, Sam Harrison has now played 110 NHL games. He's a record of 51-39-12. And if you do that by did he win or did he lose, it would be a record of 51 wins and 52 losses. Overtime losses or shootouts would put him one game under that 500. Oddly enough, the guy who's been brought in and signed to a two-year contract is in a similar situation where Harrison's played 110 games. Vladar's played 105. He has a record of 49-34-16. That would be a combined record of 49-50 by win or loss. His career goals against average is 2.99, and save percentage for his career is 8.95, where Harrison's is 2.98 and a career save percentage of 8.88. Now, save percentage, we look at it and go, well, you got to have 915, 920, 925 to be a good goalie in this league. That number's coming down significantly because of what we just talked about, quality of shots versus quantity of shots. No more freebies for goaltenders, and they're going to have to adjust to that, and that's not going to be easy. Goalie loves to build up confidence, touch the puck, and give him some easy saves to make. That builds confidence for a goaltender. When you don't have that and you just get higher quality and less quantity, it's something that a goaltender mentally is going to have to deal with. So without further ado, let's get to him right now. He's been on the podcast before. I love talking to him, and I hope you guys find this incredibly informative as well. Let's welcome in right now from InGoal Magazine, InGoal Radio Podcast, Kevin Woodley. Very special edition, summer edition of Flyers Daily, brought to you by Ticketmaster. Make more memories live. We got a lot to talk about. I purposely didn't talk about goaltending on Monday and Wednesday's episode, knowing we were going to talk about it today with my favorite guest from InGoal Mag, InGoalMag.com, the InGoal Radio Podcast. He's been on Flyers Daily before. He's a great guy, and he's a great goalie talker. It is Kevin Woodley. Woodley, how you doing?
I'm glad you added the word talker in there, because I got a lot of teammates that if you had stopped that great goalie, we would have been in trouble, buddy. It's absolutely my pleasure. Check is in the mail for the fine introduction. Thank you, sir.
Do you do a lot of talking when you play?
Yeah, mostly. I mean, you know how it is. All roads lead to beer league, and it's mostly under my breath. I feel like I should get one of those Venom masks, like get my mask painted like Venom, because there is always this sort of second running dialogue in my head. A lot of the things we write about at Ingle Mag, like lessons about, you know, mental strength and all that, are not practiced by me. I tend to, most of my thoughts, the stuff that comes out loud is not about communicating with my defensemen in terms of leaves and puck touches, because they don't like to let me handle the puck. It's mostly just cursing them under my breath.
Yeah, the guy not back-checking, those kind of things. That's beer league in a nutshell.
Why do we have two defensemen below the opposite goal line with a one-goal lead and a power play in the final 2 minutes? Those kinds of things go through my mind every once in a while.
Yeah, I tell my D when I played beer league, don't, if a puck gets dumped in and they're not attacked, don't even come inside the blue line. I'll save your legs. They love it. I'll go out and I'll bomb it up the ice and we're good to go. And they appreciate that, because you save their legs, and their legs ain't much anymore.
Doesn't work for me. I don't have the skill to bomb it up the ice, Jason. So I got to work on that one.
Yeah, I got heavily influenced by Ron Hextall in the 80s and when I was playing, and that developed that skill, which is a fun thing to do. Kevin, obviously the Flyers trying to make over their goalie room with the addition of Dan Vladar to some degree. Last year it was a bomb. It just didn't work. It was a three-goalie system they were carrying at one point, guys standing around at practice, whether it was Kolesov or Fedotov, and it just didn't work out with either of the two Russian goalies. I don't know if Kolesov, I don't know what the plan is for him. I imagine Fedotov's going to go through waivers and clear first and foremost and be with the Phantoms, and it'll be Dan Vladar and Erickson. Let's get a little download on Vladar. You're out there in Vancouver. You get to see him a little bit more, playing out there in Calgary the last couple of years. What do you think of Vladar, even though he's only played no more than 30 games in a season? But where's his game at in his prime now? He's 27 years old.
Yeah, so there's still upside there. And I think within, like, the overall numbers don't jump off the charts. They're slightly below expected. I think one of the things you got to remember in Calgary last year is there were moments where it almost felt like there were nights as they were unexpectedly chasing a playoff spot, where they would sort of pick the spots, probably not consciously, obviously, Jason, but like, hey, like, we don't have a chance tonight. This is Dan's net. We got a chance to win this. You know, so he got some really tough starts, man. Like, he got some really tough starts. But again, overall, the expected, the environment we talk about, expected save percentage based on the shot quality faces. And, you know, quick caveat, every number I reference here will be courtesy of my access to ClearSight Analytics and Steven Valiquette's numbers, which, as we've discussed before, I don't think anybody does a better job of measuring shot quality. And obviously that's important to goaltending. I actually think, you know, for a quick aside, you can flip the switch and look at who's generating shot quality as well. So it's not just a goalie metric tool, but I like to use it for goaltenders. And at the end of the day, Dan Vladar was slightly below expected. I've looked at him and talked to a lot of people about him. So it's not just my opinion. It's from evaluators around the league that I trust. Some of the best, frankly. Whether it's young goalies or, you know, pro scouting. And the phrase that comes back is one I've used in the past, actually in regards to Sam Erickson. High floor, questions, not in a negative sense, but just uncertainty sense about how high the ceiling is.
Yeah.
And so, you know, having that high floor, that steadiness to your game, like, that's a good thing, right? A consistent base with which to work with. And then the question becomes, you know, where is the ceiling above that? And I think, you know, I know a lot of people have looked at the 5-on-5 numbers for Dan last year. They were really good. The penalty kill struggled. And obviously some of that is going to be how the Flames kill. But also the penalty kill is where, you know, that's where you require that extra something, that next level, that dynamic nature. And he's showing signs of it. But being able to sort of execute it consistently, let's be honest, like, that's what separates the middle of the pack in the NHL from the elite guys. There's only so many guys that have that can combine a high floor with a really high ceiling. And so he's shown signs of the high ceiling, hasn't delivered it consistently. Overall, the numbers are slightly below expected during his time in Calgary. But I think the most important thing, and obviously not to take another question away, but I think the most important thing in Philadelphia, and we can talk about this now or later, is how the environment changes. Yeah. Because for all the criticism that I saw of Flyers goaltending last year, and I read a bunch of it, they had one of the worst environments in the National Hockey League for their goalies. As a matter of fact, when we look at expected save percentage, so again, expected is basically what the average NHL goalie would stop or would be expected to stop based on the quality of shots faced. The Flyers have three of the worst or lowest expected worst environment goaltending numbers from last year, at least amongst guys who, you know, saw at least a couple hundred chances, a couple hundred shots. So take away like the, you know, the Phoenix Copleys who got 9 shots, Nico Koko who got 6, like filtered out for guys who actually played a few games in the league. And, you know, Kolasov, in his first year of North American pro hockey, had an expected save percentage of .872.
Holy.
That was the worst in the league. That was the worst environment in the entire National Hockey League.
They just did not play well in front of him then. The structure.
Yes. Sam Harrison, .880. That's the 6th worst. Fedotov, .882. 8th worst. So, like, when your goalies, when I look at expected save percentages, and you've got three of the, you know, I highlight Flyers, and three of the lowest 8 in the league are all Flyers. Like, that's not a good thing. Now, listen, that doesn't mean you can't outperform a bad environment. Alex Nedeljkovic had an .879 expected in Pittsburgh, and he outperformed it by a little bit. Again, most people probably can't even see that because the raw numbers just make it look like he had a bad season, but he actually had an above-average season behind a bad team. Freddie Anderson was .878 in Carolina, of all places, in a small sample, and outperformed it by a significant margin. So that is not letting the goalies off the hook entirely. But I think in Arison's case especially, when you are in a bad environment, and again, we talk about floors and ceilings, when you are in a bad environment for a long time, that's...
It'll pull you down.
100%. Like, you can't... Yep. You can only... You know, I got this question about UC Saros a bunch last year, Jason. What's wrong with UC Saros? And, like, nothing. The end of November, I looked, and I'm like, nothing? Around the end of November, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, I went through it all for somebody a couple months ago, but roughly around the end of November. So we're a couple months into the season. We're at least a third of the way through the season. It may have been even into December for him. He should have been a Vezina candidate.
Yeah.
That's how good he was. But eventually, and by the end of the year, the numbers did fall off below the expectations we would have for a UC Saros and his new contract and all those things. But for the first third of the season, he did everything in his power to keep a bad team afloat, and eventually it just becomes too much because there is no such thing as a truly predictable environment in today's National Hockey League where with such dynamic offensive attacks and teams not wasting shots like they used to. There are degrees of predictability.
Yep.
And when it is as unpredictable as it was seemingly in Philadelphia by the numbers or for UC Saros in Nashville, there's only so much you can do. And so to throw two young or at least inexperienced by NHL standards and the league goalies into that is tough. Sam Harrison outperformed it by a significant margin at the beginning of the season. There seems to be a thing with him, and you would know this better than me, where starts great, gets hurt, comes back. I don't know if he comes back too soon or what, but can't find the same level. That's where I think having a more established guy like Vladar, so you don't get to the point where you're running him down behind a team like that. And then we can get to talk and how the environment should change as well.
Yeah, and because we're going to talk about that with Tockett. The thing is, and I want people to understand this, is the environment will become overwhelming. And there's a cumulative effect to the environment, which is why you see, you know, like a guy like Saros outperforming it, eventually gets overwhelmed by it. And then it pulls him under because of the scar tissue and the PTSD of backdoor not being covered, of cross-ice passes continually getting, then you begin to cheat. That's human nature. That's 100%. Why the overwhelming pulls everything eventually underwater.
You get a 2-on-1, it's the simplest example. You get an odd man rushing, you know that defenseman's supposed to take it. And the first 10 times, you stay true to the guy carrying the puck. You don't cheat to the back door, you just stay on him. Maybe sometimes that guy shoots it, and that allows you to make some saves, and you build some confidence early in the season. Okay, now a couple get through and the defenseman doesn't take away the pass. Hey, it's a tough league with skilled players making great plays. Okay, now it's like, okay, man, I felt really confident staying on my job, my shooter. But now they're starting to get through. Do I take a little less ice? And now I've exposed myself more to the shooter, but I'm more prepared to get across. you get to 20 odd man rushes and seven of them gotten through that weren't supposed to, you're going to start not just playing deeper in your net and not squaring up on the guy carrying the puck. You're going to start to cheat to the pass. Like, and as soon as
you're
gonna
load the outside leg for the push.
And as soon as you cheat in this league, you're dead. Like, you talk Jake Allen when he was on Hockey Night in the playoffs, talked about the triangle, which is basically the space underneath your push pad. As soon as players now see you loading for that push, you know, they're shooting underneath that pad because they know that loaded foot can't get to the ice because it's preparing to play, or not as easily. So, and the same goes through every aspect of the game. If you've got screens and traffic and your system is, hey, and most are, like most, you know, it's pretty generic. Goalie takes the short side sight line because that's the quickest path for the puck to the net. Like, if you draw a line from the puck to the short side post and draw it to the far side post, especially as you get off angle and outside the dots, it takes longer to get to the far side post. There's more bodies in the middle of the ice. So if you had to pick a side to cheat and find vision, it's always going to be short side first. So that means that our shot blockers, our flexing forwards, our defensemen, their job is to be in the middle lane. Like, that's how most...
Block.
It's an oversimplistic example. But it's not just being there. It's being in the right lane when you're there. We saw this in with Hellebuck in Winnipeg. People were ripping him. The environment was one of the best in the... Like, it's a flip side thing. He had one of the best defensive environments in the league in the regular season. And he outperformed it by a significant margin. Was full value for the Vezina. If you compare his numbers last year to what Shesterkin did the year he was a Hart finalist, Shesterkin should have got the Hart too. But he had a really great defenseman. But it cratered in the playoffs. A lot of part of it was everybody talks about traffic and teams just targeting him with traffic. Well, it wasn't just him struggling behind the traffic and pucks off bodies and broken plays and all those things that come with traffic. It was the fact that his players weren't in the right lanes when they went out. Like, there was an example that I talk about because it really got a lot of play in the postseason. Most people probably forgot it, but it was Brandon Tanev going out to the point. And they were talking about how Hellebuck was managing his lanes, and they were focusing on him. And I'm like, Brandon Tanev's not even in the right lane.
Yeah.
Like, you can't get to the playoffs and you don't know what lane to chase out to the point. Like, you're in the wrong... You're creating a layered screen on your own.
Yeah, so, he was on the outside and creating a layered screen because he had other guys in the middle that wasn't in tandem.
Right, and so you've got to be on the same page. And listen, it's a dynamic game that moves fast and it's impossible to always be in the right spot. But there are degrees to which you are. And when we get a bad defensive environment as a goalie, you know what your system is. You know where you're supposed to be. But if you get often enough that nobody else is in their spot, you're sort of left sort of fending for things. The other example I'll give of this, because people are like, well, what does it matter? The goalie just has to figure it out. Vegas, when Fleury was there, they used to give up a lot of high danger. But the goalies knew where the high danger was coming from. Like, they had one high danger, one specific, for example, to worry about on specific plays. And it's like, okay, we're going to give that up. But I can get to it. And our goalie coach at the time, Dave Pryor, wants me out, aggressive, assertive, not retreating. So I can get to that spot, take up a ton of net, because I'm trusting that nobody, these other two options aren't options. And when nobody's on the same page and the environment and the defensive play starts to fall apart, and defense isn't about defensemen, it's about a five-man unit.
Yep.
The goalie's ability to trust that, hey, I just got to worry about this. Yeah, I'm aware of everything else, but this is where my focus on, it starts to disintegrate. And over time, now you're no longer just focused on the puck or one guy or two options. You're worried about all 10 floating around the zone, and that's a tough way to play goal.
Kevin, you're in Vancouver. You covered the Canucks for NHL.com. Rick Tocchet obviously was there the last couple of years. He came in a couple of years ago, mid-season. I think he coached 36 games that year. And then obviously not this past season, the season prior, great season, finished first in the Pacific with the Canucks. Things went a little sideways last year.
A little?
Yeah, very sideways last year, both on the ice and off the ice. And you look at the situation there, and Tock decides not to remain in Vancouver, takes the job in Philadelphia. How much of what went on out there in Vancouver can kind of be attributed to coaching, or, you know, the locker room I know was a mess, and obviously there was something with Petey and JT Miller. When you look at that situation as a guy that was surrounded every day, what was going on there?
Well, I you know what? I'm not in the locker room. So, and I know players have since come out and downplayed it, and in the meantime you have management talking about how significant it was to the point where they needed to trade away essentially their best forward last year, right? So obviously it was not nothing, right, as we were told several times. And actually, it's funny because Rick's so honest, and as a media person, you're going to love him. The market will love him, not just because he's honest, but because he explains things. If you're willing to talk hockey with him and ask him hockey, he'll explain it. It was a real treat, to be honest with you. And I think in Vancouver, I think most in the media realized just how unique that was, that willingness to sort of explain things. And I loved it because, you know me, I like to dig into the minutiae and geek out a little bit. I'll ignore the locker room stuff, although clearly there was an issue there.
Yeah.
To the degree, I can't say. There's issues here in a lot of different ways. There's issues right up to ownership in terms of how they deal with things. Players are treated great, staff, coaches are treated, like, it's just, there are things that go on here that lead to a lot of the chaos that gets reported on, not just locally. Ironically, it's mostly nationally that it gets reported on. So, but let's focus on the ice, because when Rick Tocchet took over the Vancouver Canucks from Bruce Boudreau, they were, again, we're talking about defensive environment. They were 27th in the National Hockey League in terms of expected goals against. They were the sixth worst team in the NHL defensively. That's what he inherited. Like, it was bad. You don't win. Like, forget making the playoffs. Even if you do. And listen, they had some...
killed in the playoffs.
Great runs under Bruce Boudreau. Got close a couple times. Or got close once, right? The late season rush and then the season after. Didn't matter. Like, it really didn't matter. If they'd gotten in under Bruce, or they continued to basically trade chances and outscore their problems under Bruce, it wouldn't have mattered in the playoffs. They would have been one and done. Because the underlying defensive metrics are what matter. It's very predictable who's going to have success in the playoffs because they take care of the defensive end. Now, ironically, your Floridas and your Edmontons can let that slip in the regular season. And I learned this with the Tampa Bay Lightning. Tampa Bay didn't have the defensive metrics the first year they got there. Columbus upset them. Then the next year, the defensive metrics were top of the league. They win. And then as they went on and kept going back, they would sag in the regular season, but it's like they had the ability. It was in their DNA to flip that switch to what mattered come playoff time. So anyways, it wouldn't have mattered under Boudreau. Under Rick Tocchet in the first year, they ended up finishing the season mid-pack. Like, it started right away, his defensive impact. But they go from 27th when he took over to the following season, 23-24, they were 7th in the NHL defensively. Now, Thatcher Demko was the same goalie and performed at the same level in that Boudreau season. Or under, but maybe not that Boudreau season, but under Boudreau the year before. And then he was the same guy. Like, nothing changed in his game. The adjusted metrics were the same, but under Tocchet, he became a Vezina Trophy finalist, because this is what we talk about with Philly and expected save percentage, and when you improve the environment, people that don't have access to these numbers can actually see what the goaltender's doing. Yeah. Like, a large part of it isn't, you're never going to win a Vezina Trophy behind a bad team, because the numbers will never be truly reflective of your ability, right? Like, you can't post a 920 when your expected's like 870, and if you do, then everyone in the world can see it, and you're Dominik Hasek, right? Like, it just doesn't happen. So they went from 27th in the league to 7th in those 2 years. And then last year, they dropped. They dropped to 10th. But most of the drop was early in the season. And I think there was a lesson learned, maybe a little bit. Rick's talked about this since. I think they thought maybe that all the work they did defensively and as a group and as a five-man unit to get the buy-in that they had when they won the Pacific Division, and those metrics were up to 7th, and they upset, or I don't know if it was an upset, but they beat Nashville in the first round of the playoffs, and they got Edmonton to 7 games in the second round despite not having Thatcher Demko. Like, all the groundwork they laid that on was, there was definitely some shooting luck. Like, they outperformed all their offensive metrics, but their defensive metrics were, like, they were exceptional. Like, those were not shocks based on how well they defended. When they came back last season, they started waste. Like, a lot of that, I think, whether it was management or the staff, there were some mistakes made in terms of players acquired, guys who were supposed to help them off the rush but didn't stop on pucks defensively, didn't make hard turns in the neutral zone, just didn't do the things they needed to continue that five-man defensive game. The numbers fell off early in the season, and I think a large part of it was the focus was on getting more offense out of the team and creating rush, and they'd lost some personnel in the back end, so they weren't transitioning clean. They just, they, I think they thought the DNA was baked in defensively after one good year, and it wasn't. And
still,
so
have to be detailed and think about it and commit to it.
Yeah, and they didn't. And they didn't. And this, yeah. And honestly, like, if, again, Rick and his staff talked about this, maybe the focus was too much on offense at the beginning of the season, assuming they were going to continue doing all the things they'd done defensively the year before. But they didn't know this group. They'd only been around them for a year. We've seen this out of this same core for years. They what limited success this group, and this is the irony of them doubling down on it this offseason, but what limited success this group has had is almost always followed up with a step back. Like there's a, hey, we did it. We don't have to work hard or complain. Yeah. Whatever it is, the track record's there. This group, you know, it's like the on the PGA Tour, they have a bounce back stat. When you have a bogey, how do you come back from it? And then they have the reverse one. When you have a birdie, how do you follow up a birdie? Yeah. This group would be bottom of the tour when it comes to following up a birdie, and that's what happened
snowman
last year.
Snowman after a birdie.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, I mean, I don't even know what the birdies are. It's just a lot of snowmen for me.
Yeah, no doubt. When you look at the way that teams are attacking, and I thought we really saw it in the playoffs, and we saw it in the regular season. Do we have to almost reevaluate raw numbers too? Because save percentage is so down. Teams are so selective about throwing quality instead of quantity to the net now. First of all, for a goalie, I think there's got to be some new mental training to help deal with this, because the lack of touches and the amount of quality you get versus quantity now is becoming such a, for a goalie, that's an issue, because quantity of low quality brings you confidence and a feel for a game. Quality without quantity, and it's all quality, it is a very difficult putt for a goaltender game in and game out.
Yeah, and it depends on the goalie, right? Like historically, there have been guys that incredible on bad teams, not bad teams, but because we didn't sort of identify things the same way, but wide open
shots,
fire wagon hockey. Like the guy that stands out, and it's not fair because I think he should probably be in the Hall of Fame. So this isn't a criticism of him, but it's just the easiest example because he was at an elite level. You put Curtis Joseph on the ice on a night where he needed to make it 50 saves and you couldn't find a better guy on the planet. You put him to Detroit where they were supposed to win and he only faced 20 shots because they had the puck the whole night. Everything fell off. Like it wasn't the same guy. And so effectively the entire league is being asked to do that job in Detroit, although without the Hall of Famers in the locker room surrounding them on both offense and defense, obviously pre-salary cap area. I wrote a piece on this during the season for NHL.com and followed it with a deeper dive over at InGoal Magazine. And it's funny because in scrums and in one-on-ones after that, I had and heard goalies reference the article to sort of point to what they believe they'd been experiencing for the last couple of years. And that's that teams do not waste shots anymore. And so it used to be that, and there were some teams that like dominated possession and the metrics would be there because they'd have all these shots on goal. Carolina was the poster child for this. And whether it's fair or not, they were the poster child for it. And I remember talking to Carolina goalies during that era and they're like, oh God, I sit here in my crease for the first 10 minutes of the game and I watch us warm up the other guy with low percentage shots. And then the first chance I face after not seeing a puck for 10 minutes is an odd man rush because something, the dam broke at the other end. We had all that possession. Somebody pinched and now we've got an odd man rush. So I'm not seeing the number of shots, but the number I see have more quality. And all we're doing at the other end is warming up the guy. So there's twofold. One, we continue to see, there's sort of two parts to this story. One is the number story. We continue to see save percentage drop and everyone's like, goaltending sucks. And listen, we've lost a dozen 65, 70 game starters in the last 5 years. When you look at the guys that retired, like Lundqvist, Luongo, Price with the injuries, like, you know, even into the like Mike Smiths and Devin Dubniks of the world, you know, maybe not Hall of Famers, but like really high end goalies that played a ton of minutes. We lost a lot of them. And because they played so much, the next generation maybe wasn't ready to come up and play that much. So that's part of it for sure. But at the end of the day, when you dive into the numbers, those warm-up shots that the Hurricanes goalies used to talk about, I call them the 99 percenters because the goalies stop 99-plus percent of the time. Or you said feel, the feelers that we all love as goalies. When a guy comes down the wing and blasts one and he's feeling his oats and he thinks he's Guy Lafleur out there with the jersey flowing behind him, and he tries to rip one from the top of the circles, and you're just like, can of corn. Like, it's the easiest save in the world. And you build confidence off of it. It low shots along the ice without screens or traffic. Like, you're steering it up over the glass for a faceoff. And so as we've got into the analytics age, teams have recognized, and the numbers back this up, that I've sat once with a goalie coach from a team, sat and watched a game with him. He did his charting beside me. And a guy would come down and take a shot. Actually, what looked to, it looks to the crowd sometimes like a quality shot, like the rush, it's off the rush. And he would mark it down on his sheet and be like, oh, that's a turnover. Because you're trading possession of the puck for, at best, a face-off and a 50-50 chance of winning it back. Yeah. And teams are now around the league looking at it that way. So if you're going to fire fewer and fewer, like significantly fewer, of the ones that goalies stop 99% of the time and only hit them with the ones that go 20% or more go in, the high-danger stuff, save percentage is coming down even if goaltending quality goes up. So that's one part of it. And then the flip side, as you said, is what does this do to a goaltender mindset-wise? Casey DeSmith told me, he's like, I feel like when I came into the league, I'd get 33 shots a night and 20 were low danger. Now I get 23 shots a night and 10 are low danger. Everything else is high and mid. And so that's a really tough way to live mentally.
Traffic, layered screens, the way they're doing things, just cross-ice passes. And it's one thing about Tocchet's system, he plays that box in one, really limits those cross-ice passes by being really condensed and protecting the middle of the ice, doesn't it?
He talks a lot about his goalies only having to play one half of the net. And I said, going from bottom six in the league to top seven in the underlying defensive metrics, like, that shows. The other thing that, the one thing that they didn't do here is they outscored what they generated in the first year, but the public numbers were more critical of their offense than what I had. And he had this, again, he's so open, you can have this discussion with him. And people need to understand, as much as we just ripped on, like, the 99 percenters and the feelers and teams are going away from them, if you can get that point shot through a layered screen and hit the top corner of the net, which isn't easy to do, and he had Quinn Hughes back there, so that makes it a little easier. But if you can find a defenseman that can move the screens around and sift the puck, and Hughes sifters like 80 miles an hour, it's crazy. But if you can sift that puck into either top corner through a layered screen, so there's more than one body between that shot and the goaltender, goes in over 40% of the time over the last three seasons. That's more than a breakaway. So it's really important. And he got ripped for all the point shots. And I think he would admit that there were times where his team deferred to the point maybe a little too much and didn't get the bodies there to create the lanes, to create the traffic. I would argue that on the power play this year, they made a mistake taking Brock Besser off the net front. He was elite net front the season before. Not just all the garbage goals off rebounds that he banged in, they scored 17 power play goals, and it was mostly him and JT Miller, the interplay between shooter and screener, but with Brock Besser's screens, not getting a point on the goal, just his screens. So again, there's no tick in his boxes for this. 2 years ago, 17 goals based on his screens, and then this year, for some reason, he wasn't net front on the power play. And so, you can be critical of coaching at times too, but I think a lot of the things that Rick Tocchet did, I think he understands these things, and it wasn't just throwing pucks at the net from the point. If you did it with purpose, there was a reason. It had a chance, and so they didn't generate much off the rush. It's true. They didn't have a lot of great skating. They didn't have puck movers on the back end. But a lot of the things that he got ripped for, from point shots and things like that, were, I think, a lot more calculated and a deeper understanding of why they can matter if you do it the right way. And so that's something to keep an eye on if you're a Flyers fan. Don't get frustrated by all those. Sometimes there's a method to that madness. And the numbers would back up that if you do it right, it's a strong
40%
method.
40% is a huge number.
It's better than a breakaway. Like, it's better than a breakaway. And what are you more likely to be able to generate?
Yeah.
Again, you have to have the skill. Not everyone is Quinn Hughes, and not everyone can hit the corner. Not everyone can even get it through the net through traffic, let alone at the corner. But you're going to have an opportunity to have the puck at the point and people going to proper lanes, I would argue, a lot more often than you're going to get a breakaway in a game.
Yeah, it looks like a nonchalant play, too, because it's not this loading up for a bomb from the point. No, it's just a wrist shot from the point that where most likely the defender – and Quinn Hughes, in your example, is kind of moving laterally across the blue line to find that lane. And it just looks like a throwaway shot, but it's a high danger chance.
It's funny because, like, I smile because you know, it's not fair to ask anyone there to do what Quinn, like what Quinn does, the way he won, his edge. I covered the entire Sedin Twins career, and there were points during that where you had to remind yourself how special what you were watching was. And I feel that way a little bit about Quinn. We get to see something special every night with him. It's remarkable how good he is at these things. So making it seem like it's easy to hit the top, you know, to move the traffic around and create those lanes mm-hmm. the way he does is just, it's like chef's kiss. It's really fun to watch. But again, so you're not always going to be able to do that, but there are ways to generate offense. And I think the bigger point is that some of it will look meat and potatoes. Mm-hmm. You're talking about point shots and traffic and tips and deflections and broken plays. One of the best way to score goals right now is broken plays. But and because of Rick's background, I think people look at it as just, you know, and they'll be like, Flyers hockey, right? Tough hockey, yep. All that. There's a lot more thought that's going into it than just that, I guess, is the point I would make. And defensively, the things he eliminates, that's the other thing about defending and that massive turnaround in the defensive metrics from his taking over midseason to the next year. It's not just about how you defend. It's a little bit like playing a game of pool or snooker. It's what you leave.
Yeah.
And so knowing when to make a high-risk play, they definitely took high-risk plays out. Like, they made less of them, and so that meant they converted a little less, especially off the rush.
Mm-hmm.
But they were 27th in the league because more often than not, the high-risk plays, especially on entries of the blue line, passes across the middle of the ice, were leading to odd man rushes the other way. And if you consistently give up odd man rushes, which is something Flyers fans have probably seen a lot of the last couple mm-hmm. of years, it's not winning hockey. You don't win that way. Yeah. I'll go to the Robin Lehner example. When he was in Buffalo and then he went to the Islanders, and was he a Vezina finalist with the Islanders or they mm-hmm. won the Jennings? Like
under Trotz.
He told me, he's like, listen, like, I can be playing the exact same way and feel just as good about my game. But with the Islanders, I see one odd man rush every two games. With Buffalo, it was five a game. If I see five odd man rushes a game and I'm playing at my best, one or two are still going in.
Yeah.
If I'm seeing five odd man rushes over the course of two or three games in New York, like, my numbers are just going to be better. Yeah. The environment matters. And so it's not about not taking risks with Rick. It's about knowing when to take them and where on the ice to take them. And so it will be a little more risk adverse, I believe. And the other thing is, like he'll continue to learn about when and where that should be, right? Like, he'll go to school on that. So big fan of the hire.
17-18, the Islanders under Doug Waite gave up the most goals in the NHL, 293. Barry Trotz comes in the next year. They gave up 191. They shaved 102 goals year to year and lost John Tavares that offseason.
Well, I can tell you that I was at a goalie camp that summer in between those two things.
Yeah.
Like, I always talked about, like, in some ways, that era of Islanders hockey, that year under Doug Waite, to me, was the perfect example. Like, because this was at a time, too, when we were talking, you know, we're cracking down on goalie equipment. We're talking about goal scoring being a problem. It's like, no, man, like, if you generate, they'll go in.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, just look at the All-Star game. People are like, oh, it's the All-Star game. Nobody defends. I'm like, okay, look at Doug Waite's Islanders, because that was an All-Star game every night. We were doing a drill that summer, and one of the goalies was one of the Islanders goalies that was out there. And there was also a coach that was in their organization that was out there on the ice. And they'd given the drill over to a younger coach. We had all NHL goalies and a couple of goalie coaches on the ice. And this was the day the young coach was going to do his drills. And they were staggered lateral feeds down the wing and then passes into the middle. And so they moved, as they moved that pass point by just moving a cone deeper into the zone, how the goalie had to manage the sharp angle option versus the pass changes as you sort of shift that pass point. So you're working on staggered feeds and you're working on post entries. And after a while, I'm like, okay, that's great. But the end result is a guy wide open at the hash marks on a lateral or low high play. Like, how realistic is this?
The Islanders, it was very realistic.
And that was what both the coach and the goalie at the time said to me. They goes, well, like, because I'm like, I said, like, how realistic is this? Like, we're working on something that you might see 15 times a season. Like, that's how wide open this look was. And they both looked at me and said, try like 5 to 10 times a game in New York last year.
And the low coming out of your post and going to the high, it's just a nightmare.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Time and space, the guy catching it didn't even have to one tee it. He's like dusting it off up there in the middle of the slot. Yeah, it was ugly. It was ugly.
And looking at his eye, he's got options all over
the place. I'm like, this is a perfect beer league drill, but I don't know how relevant it is to the National Hockey League. And then you got two people in the National Hockey League saying it was relevant to our team.
Yeah, not the next year under Trotz, that's for sure. Kevin, great stuff, man. I really appreciate you coming on, and I hope people got a lot out of it, as they always do when you join us. You can read Ked's stuff online, ingoalmag.com, the In Goal Radio podcast. At Kev is In Goal is your Twitter handle. Anything else you want to
We go full name. Kevin is In Goal on the Twitter handle. Mostly just In Goal Mag. Like if you're not a goalie, probably not for you. If you are a goalie coach, there is I'll be
curious.
I'll pat the back. There is no better resource. We sit down and do video with NHL goalies once a week, and have that. It's like a video. It's like you being taken in the room for a film session with an NHL goalie. If you've got a young goalie who needs to learn how to play the game, read the game, anticipate the game, we've had NHL goalie coaches say there is no better resource. I have NHL goalies that watch how other guys break down the game so they can pick up things. We got like Connor Hellebuck, 3 Vezina trophies now? We got 22 straight minutes of him just breaking down how he reads and anticipates and chooses depth and save selections. There's nothing like it in the world. If you're a goalie, we'll make you a better goalie, whether it's whether you're in Pee Wee, pro, or like me, all roads lead to beer league.
Yeah, the pro reads are tremendous. They take you and kind of make you feel what they feel, where the threats are, and it gives. I think it gives you a better intuition of the game and you know how things play out. But it's phenomenal stuff. InGoalMag.com. Head there as well, Kevin. Thanks for doing this, man. We'll talk soon.
My pleasure, Jason. Always great to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
All right, there he is, Kevin Woodley, joining us on Flyers Daily. Love talking to him, and. It's going to be a really interesting year in the NHL. I love what he referenced, you know, the goaltending in the NHL, the goaltending, they lost so many bell cows, whether it was Price or even Dubnyk, Luongo. Over the years, they shed all these big names that carried huge loads in the NHL. And now we're in this process of finding the new guys that can do that. We know Connor Hellebuck can. We know Igor Shesterkin can. We know that Ilya Sorokin can. And there's other guys, Jake Ottinger, although he needs to be better in the playoffs. Sergei Bobrovsky wasn't great initially in the playoffs and then turned out to be playing great. Vasilevsky, we know those guys, but who's that next generation of top goaltenders in the NHL? Is it Sam Harrison? Is it Dan Vladar, who's now in his prime, about to turn 27 years of age? Or is it a guy like Carson Bjarnason or Igor Zavragin, who's playing in the KHL and in the Flyers system? We shall see. Thanks to Kevin for joining us on this episode of Flyers Daily. Everybody, have a great weekend. Welcome to August, and we'll talk to you Monday for a Monday with Meltzer from Ireland episode of Flyers Daily.